The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, let me take you back to last year. And last year, I was invited to a wedding reception. And as a dad with two young kids, this is great news. Why? Because it means I get a night out, which is yes. It also means I get a night out without kids, even better. And it means I get a night out to dance on a dance floor. And I thought, yes, I'm at a wedding reception. Isn't this great? But when my wife and I rocked up to this wedding reception, we realized we were on that table. And that table was the one where we looked around at all the place cards, the name holders, and we realized we knew no one at all. And then we quickly ran back to the table arrangements and think, we've got friends there, where are they? And we realized all our friends were seated on another table, which means we were stuck on a table where it was that table. A table where we didn't know anyone. A table where we really were the leftover table. A table of randoms. It was table 19. I remember table 19 well. I remember the awkward and abrupt conversations. I remember trying to break the ice with some light-hearted jokes, but every joke I threw in just froze the conversation even more. I remember getting nervous laughter like, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, could this get any worse? And I remember on table 19, my best friend were actually cups of water. Why? Because that meant I could keep on going to the toilet, because that was the only way I could avoid being on table 19. See, table 19 was the table where I didn't fit in at all, and I had to choose between two evils. One, do I return to table 19 and suffer the awkwardness throughout the whole night, or do I leave early, but then suffer the shame of reinforcing that I never really fitted in the first place? Because all I knew was that table 19 wasn't going to change. Well, welcome to Bible Shots, as Lachlan introduced. My name is Mark Leong, and I work at City Bible Forum full time. And we're in the middle of a series titled this, Unlocked, Maximizing Your Potential, where we unlock three different personality types. And last week, we unlocked the perfectionist. This week, we're going to look at the divergent. See, what happens when you are not like everybody around you? What happens when you're at work, you're considered to be outside the box? What happens when you are the outlier when it comes to the main cultural and social norms of your family? What happens when every sheep is white and you are the black sheep? And if you've ever felt this way, you will know the lesser of two evils dilemma. Do I stick to my guns and live with the awkwardness of not fitting in, or do I change? Do I converge, which just reinforces the fact that I never really fit in the first place? And there's no guarantee that I'll fit in now. You see, is there another way to draw the best out of someone who's divergent than asking them to converge? Is there another way to draw the best out of a personality than rather than asking them to become something that they're not? Because if there is, then there's a way to outfox, outwit the lesser of two evils dilemma. And from the outset, can I suggest that knowing Jesus is a way to bring the best out of a personality, and not that, and Jesus doesn't ask the person to become something they're not. Jesus unlocks their potential. So today we're going to unlock the divergent, and the talk's going to be divided into three parts. The first part, let me define what a divergent is. The middle part of the talk, let's understand them. Let's walk in their shoes. What are the advantages and disadvantages? And I'm going to show one of each. And the final part is, what difference does Jesus make if you are divergent? Not just any difference, but how can he bring the best? How can he maximize their potential? So let's go to the first part of the talk. What is a divergent? Now, I could look this up in a dictionary, I could go to a psychological journal, but rather than giving the plain dictionary definition, I think being divergent is intensely personal. So rather than go the scientific way, why don't we hear a voice of someone who feels that way? And so the definition I'm going to put up is one which has been informed by this book, The Misfits Manifesto by Lydia Yuknovich. And this is the definition which I've put together from this book. A divergent is a person who is unable to conform to the cultural and social scripts they have inherited. See, you could define a divergent as someone who breaks the rules. They leave the rules, but I think that's too small. You could define a divergent as someone who moves away, is the outlier from social customs, but I think that's too narrow. The strength of this definition is a divergent is someone who can't find their place in the main cultural story, in the main narrative, the script that has been handed down to them. And so a divergent is somebody who feels like they don't belong, someone who feels lost and ashamed that they can't find their place in the story, someone who might feel useless because they don't have a contribution to make as a main character. They're more on the periphery, a spectator, than a key player. A divergent is someone who struggles for purpose. And I think we can see the strength of this definition by applying it to a couple of situations. Let me apply it to a trivial one, the wedding, the story I started off with. Well, what should weddings be? What's the main cultural script? Weddings should be fun. It's a celebration. It should be a party. But while everyone else was partying, I was stuck on table 19, where I had no friends. It was no fun. So I couldn't conform to the main cultural storyline, and I felt divergent. I didn't belong. I wondered, should I stay, should I leave? Did I waste a night? Or I think the wedding is a bit trivial. Let me bring it really close to home. Here is an advertisement for a university, Sydney University, asking people to enrol with them. What's the main cultural and social script being offered here? This is Victor Chang, I will give people a second chance at life. Leadership for good starts here. What's the main cultural and social script? Well, it's this. You should get a job that makes a difference. You should get a job that changes the world, that has great impact, because that's a great job. But what happens when you have a job like this? It's mundane. It's boring. You feel like a small cog in a really large machine. You might not even be working in the field that you studied at university. Maybe something totally different. What am I doing here? What difference am I making? And so you feel divergent. You feel ashamed being on the periphery of the story rather than being at the center. You wonder, what is your purpose? What is the meaning of the job you have? Why am I doing this at all? See, whether it's in the workplace, whether it's your family, or whether it's the dreams you're chasing, I think we all know what it feels like to be divergent at some point in time. We all know how there was a main script and we haven't been able to conform to it. Actually, you might feel that right now today. So that's defining a divergent. Let me go to the middle part of the talk. What are the advantages and disadvantages? Let's understand a divergent. And you might think I'm pulling your leg, but there are advantages of being divergent. Let's go back to the book. Divergents are remarkably good at invention, reinvention, innovation in the face of what other people might see as failure. And this is her opinion, but I don't think this is wishful thinking, because let me introduce you to these two men. We know them? Who's that? Bill Gates and Steve Jobs. Let me wind back the clock. This was them back in 1976. Now, how many people were investing in the computer industry back in 1976? Nobody was. Steve and Bill, they were the nerds. They were the social and cultural divergents on the periphery. And yet, they stuck to being divergent and came up with inventions that now have touched every single person here. You see, the nerds, the divergents, became the people who shaped and influenced everyone. They became the cool people all of a sudden. And that story has repeated itself again and again, hasn't it? Look at Tesla and Elon Musk. Look at Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. Here are divergents who are remarkably good at tackling scenarios from a unique perspective just because they're divergent. They're on the periphery. They can offer a unique perspective outside the main story. And so they have the ability to see the blind spots, to be inventive and creative, and that is a massive advantage. Beware of dismissing a divergent because they have a track record of making contributions before their time. They're on the frontier of innovation. And that's a huge advantage. But this huge advantage has a hidden danger and a disadvantage. This year, I finally introduced my kids to Star Wars. I watched the first Star Wars movie with them, and I feel that that has enhanced my relationship with my kids. It's taken it to the next level. I think I'm now a super dad because I've done this. Why? Because now with my kids, we can talk about the Millennium Falcon. We can also talk like Yoda. So I can say, Mark, two children I have, and my kids think it's quite funny. And of course, now I've introduced this to my two kids, we can have lightsaber duels. That's now a legitimate game we play in our family. And the way we've worked it is there's dad and it's kids, and we fight each other. But because I'm a responsible adult, I say, hey, you know, we need to make this game safe. And so we've decided when we do lightsaber duels, you have to hit a predetermined part of the body. And if you hit that part, you win. And we've said, no one can hit the head, because that would just be a little bit too mean. So this is how it goes. We'll say, hey, before we play, if you hit an arm, then you win. Or the next game, if you hit a leg, then you win. But when I duel with my 4-year-old son, Mitchell, this is how the game goes. I'll hit him on the arm, and he'll say, no, Dad, it's not the arm this game, it's the leg. And I go, okay, I have to eat you on the leg. And then I'll hit him on the leg, and he'll go, no, Dad, it's not the leg, it's the arm. And as a dad, I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, maybe I should bring the head back into play, because then I can whack you on the head as part of the game. See, what my son has taught me is this. When you don't want to lose, you can always win if you shift the goalposts. But when you shift the goalposts, that's not really winning, is it? And that is the hidden danger of this new script, the advantage of being divergent. Because a divergent is only valued because they're innovative, because they provide a solution overlooked by others. But all you're doing there is shifting the goalposts, giving them a different script with different norms and goals. And while it might make some winners, it also makes some losers. What happens if you're a divergent and circumstances conspire against you such that you are unable to succeed? What happens when you're divergent and you are unable to come up with good ideas? Well, now you're a divergent of the divergent. And that makes you feel even worse. See, the game of shifting goalposts doesn't deal with the underlying issue because it's still a game of convergence and divergence. Nothing's changed. Changing goalposts actually makes life harder
for everyone. And that's a hidden but big disadvantage.
So the first part, we define what a divergent is. The middle part, we've understood it, the advantages and disadvantages. Let's go to the final part. What difference does Jesus bring to those who are divergent? And we're going to see, we're going to do this by looking at a person who trusted Jesus and whose life was changed when he was a divergent. How did Jesus unlock his potential? So let's go to the final part, unlocking divergence. And let's look at the story. It's a story of a man who lived in the Middle East, this area of the world. His name was Paul, and he was one of the first followers of Jesus. So he lived around the first century. And this guy, Paul, he became quite a well-known leader of followers of Jesus. He would have been a household name. And as a household name and as a leader, he used to teach other followers of Jesus, what did following Jesus look like? And as he was writing one of his letters doing this, he shared a little bit about his story. And this is how it went. For what I received, I pass on to you as of first importance. Remember, this guy Paul is a teacher, so he's passing things on, teaching things. For what I received, I pass on to you as of first importance, that Christ died for our sins according to the Scriptures, that he was buried, that he was raised on the third day according to the Scriptures, and that he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. After that, he appeared to more than 500 of the brothers at the same time, most of whom are still living, though some have fallen asleep. Can you see the crescendo? He appeared to Peter first, then to 12, now to 500. There are more and more people that this guy Jesus is appearing to. And then he appeared to James as well, then to all the apostles. The apostles are another word for Christian leader. And last of all, he appeared to me, also as to one abnormally born. For I am the least of the apostles and do not even deserve to be called an apostle, a Christian leader, because I persecuted the church of God. Can you see how Paul viewed himself as a divergent here? He is the one who is abnormally born. The cultural and social scripts at the time was that all Christian leaders were models of faith. They were upright citizens and they heard and saw Jesus with their own ears and eyes. You know, Peter did, James did, but Paul? He was the last of all, one abnormally born, and he even persecuted followers of Jesus. He gladly watched and sponsored the systematic targeting of Jesus's followers. Paul did not conform to the script. I'm abnormally born. I'm the last. I'm the least. I am divergent. So how does knowing Jesus change this situation? How does Jesus change Paul's feeling that he doesn't belong? More importantly, how does Jesus stop Paul from shifting the goalpost? Because that's what Paul could have done. He could have said, yeah, I am the least, I'm the last, but you know what? Hey, I'm quite successful. How many followers do you have? I'm quite popular, I have a bigger reach. He could have shifted goalposts, but how does Jesus stop Paul doing that? Well, let's pick up where we left off, because this is what Paul says. But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace to me was not without effect. No, I worked harder than all of them, yet not I, but the grace of God. Jesus stops Paul shifting the goalposts by giving Paul a completely different script to live by, a new cultural storyline based on this phrase, by the grace of God. It's God's grace given to Paul. Now, God's grace is a big topic. It's a deep and rich one, and we could spend a whole talk on this, but if I were to boil it down, if I were to break it down, if I were to distill it to one simple idea, it's this. God's first act to all people is to give something to them rather than ask something from them. Is to give something to them rather than ask something from them. And Paul sees God doing this to him. And that's the basis of this new story. Paul sees God giving him a gift which was open to all.
rather than asking Paul to become something.
And so the new storyline based on this God's grace is one which didn't require Paul to shift. Why? Because it was a gift given to Paul where he was. It wasn't a story which asked Paul to conform, converge to belong. No, it's one where God met Paul where he was as a divergent. And you can see this in what Paul says. By the grace of God, I am what I am. Let that just sink in for a moment. Paul didn't have to hide that he was a systematic persecutor. He didn't have to shift goals and make him build himself up. He didn't need to sweep all of this I don't belong under the carpet. Why? Because of God's grace. God loved him where he was. Jesus met Paul where he was. Paul didn't need to do anything more because this is God's story of grace. The God of the Bible isn't afraid to give divergents a new story, one which they belong, one which they don't need to feel shame for being divergent, one which they don't have to hide because they come as they are. Jesus' death and resurrection at the first Easter is so far-reaching that you and I don't have to move a step. We don't need to shift because God invites us as we are. And when we hear that invitation like Paul, God invites us into his family, giving us significance, belonging, and purpose. And so Paul was able to enter God's story as a divergent. That didn't prevent him from coming. He didn't need to conform. And because God's story is such a powerful gift, because knowing Jesus is so powerful, it freed up Paul to work even harder, to be even more bolder, to aim even higher as a divergent. Because what did he say? No, because I know Jesus and because of this story based on God's grace, I worked harder than all of them. So here is the way to bring out the best in this personality without asking them to become something they're not. And it's knowing Jesus and God's grace. This is Alex Krotowski. She's a journalist, and in 2011 she wrote a piece about the power of storytelling. And I'm just going to read it and see, does it resonate with you? Stories are memory aids, instruction manuals, and moral compasses. When enlisted by charismatic leaders and turned into manifestos, dogmas, and social policy, they've been the foundation for religions and political systems. When a storyteller has held an audience captive around a campfire, a cinema screen, or on the page of a bestseller, they've reinforced local and universal norms about where we've been and where we're going. And when they've been shared in the corner shop, at the pub, or over dinner, they've helped us define who we are and how we fit in. Today, we've heard God's story of grace and how God's first act is to give rather than ask us to conform. He meets us where we're at. And so the divergent is met where he or she is at. You don't have to hide. God will come to you. But more importantly, God doesn't stop there. By his grace, he changes you as well, inviting you into his larger story, inviting you into his community and his plans. And this is the way that knowing Jesus can unlock your potential. Because this is a beautiful story that serves as a memory aid, instruction manual, and moral compass. So what are the scripts, cultural norms, cultural storylines that you live by? How is your story going? And will you give Jesus a go and try out his story? Thanks. Yeah, so I guess, is Jesus actually the ultimate divergent? And I think the answer is yes and no. I think Jesus understood what it was like to be divergent. I mean, if you look at his life, he hung around with often the marginalized, the people on the periphery. So he hung around with those who were culturally divergent. People in his time in the first century, the Samaritans. No one hung around with them. He hung around with them. He hung around with the morally divergent. So people who were classified in the time as sinners. He ate with them, which no one was willing to do. He even hung around with people whose sexual activity was kind of a bit promiscuous, weren't quite sure, so no one, there was a stigma. He hung around with them as well. And so thinking, wow, Jesus can understand. He spent time with people who felt on the peripheral. So yes, in that sense, he's divergent. But all the other, I guess I don't want to push, was he actually, did he not belong? Yes and no, I guess. No in the sense, but he was able to relate to people. He was able to connect to people. He was able to be part of, enter their storylines and suggest maybe this is not going where you think it is. Perhaps there's another way, a different way, maybe a more fulfilling way to live. And I guess this is the whole unlocking element. Jesus enters and unlocks something which we thought maybe we're trying to get but we'll never actually be able to get. So I guess that's yes and no. He understood the divergent, but he was probably more at the centre and had and was a rally point than being on the peripheral as well. So yeah, so I think yes and no.
Mike, for some of us might not feel like divergent. We might feel like we've largely got it together. We've got friends. We're happy with our job. We fit in. What does this divergent stuff have to say to us?
Yeah, exactly.
Just us.
Yeah, Lachlan, you're definitely divergent. I work with you. Yeah. I know how divergent you are. I think that might not
be our default personality. I catch up with workers, that's part of my job. I've been doing this for 6 years. I think it would be rare to say that none of us could sympathise or understand what it feels like to be on the outside, to be the outlier, whether it's through our childhood. But I think even as adults, I think people are not quite sure what their purpose is. You know, when it came to work, I guess, especially. Really, the more workers I meet, a lot of them are thinking, well, how does this fit in? Am I on the periphery? Am I at the centre? What is the purpose? I feel a little bit lost. All of those feelings are associated with, I think, being divergent. And once I break it down to the feelings rather than the label, I still haven't met somebody who can't sympathise with that. So while that might not be the entire of our personality, I think this will resonate with us. And maybe in a way that we might not be willing to admit, which kind of proves the point. Because divergents generally don't have the ability to stand up and say, that's me, unless they know Jesus. Because that's exactly what Paul did.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.